So next topic is basically following up and closing things out on how I actually have used some of these technologies in my own courses. And I'm just going to give you a quick little discussion about how I use YouTube for an assignment in class. We've talked about some of these things. Dr. Munshaw shared with us how quickly things are happening online, how much content's being added very, very quickly. You can find these kinds of infographics out there. The fact that, you know, there is a new generation of students coming into the classroom. Most of them have some sort of a mobile device. They are learning very, very differently. As an aside, you know, one of my motivations for bringing Dr. Castile in here to talk about the YouTubes is they noticed something very, very different about their clientele. And, you know, some of the growers that are spending a lot of time in harvesting machines, they seem to want to have something to do during the harvest. So they're actually sitting in the, you know, the cab of those units and watching YouTube videos. You know, basically the computer's driving that thing down the fields, and they're looking for something to do. So that's motivated folks like Sean to you know, provide some of these content. They don't want paper copies anymore, so it's pretty interesting how things are changing. But again, things are very, very quickly changing in the classroom. We all see it that are in the classroom. One of the things is, you know, it's oftentimes a debate, you know, is this technology a distraction? Is it helping the students? You know, how do we as instructors deal with things? You know, as Derek Settle sits there and tweets while I'm talking, you know, is that bothering me? Actually, it's not. I'm kind of used to it. But at the same time, we're all doing things very, very differently. And so, you know, my thought of it as I came around to this several years ago is, you know, I don't care if Derek's tweeting. He's here. You know, we're going to hang out afterwards. If he has a question about, you know, how many points he needs to level up in my class, we can chat about that, and he can make a couple YouTube videos, or, you know, it's the carrot and the stick kind of concept. Again, you saw something like this. You know, we're looking at Bloom's taxonomy, talking about pedagogy, and, you know, how is this classroom changing? How are we getting students to engage content and not just you know, throw it back at us in terms of a memorization game, and getting them to engage it in some fashion beyond just sort of a textbook or reading it from traditional methods is where we're headed. The other thing is we've got some great students. I mean, we've got some really creative types of folks that are enthusiastic. I mean, anybody that goes out and makes a costume that they want to go as you know, a turf grass shirt, you know, you want to engage these people because they're that next generation that's going to really help us in terms of getting the message out that we're all trying to, you know, show that grass is good, and he's excited, he's going to go into the workforce. And, you know, so as I pondered this, and I'm like, okay, you know, I've done certain things a certain way for a long period of time. How can I start to engage some other things? And, you know, fundamental content is, you know, turf grasses. You know, what are turf grasses all about? And how can I get them to not just read it, but to actually engage it? So I designed an assignment. And basically, as part of my introductory turf grass laboratory, one of the things that they have to do, it's a group assignment, you know, groups of either two or three students, that through the semester they have to choose two different species, a cool season species and a warm season species. We actually have sort of like a fantasy football draft where we put all the things on the board and the groups get together and they can choose, okay, I got Kikuyu grass, you got St. Augustine grass, go through that. What I do is I put together this assignment and basically show them, you know, what's the expectation in terms of what should be part of this video. The other piece of this is once they actually create the videos is the students actually would judge it as far as, you know, if it's good or if it's bad. And, you know, the big winners, at times I've given them some sort of a, you know, small text or something that they can use that's related to the turf grass industry. So those are the kinds of things that we're looking at. The other piece, and, you know, Brandon certainly touched on this, is there is a pre-planning worksheet where I make them actually, you know, figure out their content ahead of time rather than having them just go right to making the video and who knows what we'd get. And this is very, very helpful in terms of, you know, an initial part of the assignment to make sure the content's there that's supposed to be there. And then they get real creative. And so I'm just going to transition here to one of the videos that the students created, and we'll go from there.
Oh. I'm Keegan Gray. Welcome to the premiere episode of Fun with Terp. Over the next 52 weeks, you and I will explore the fun and exciting world of terpology.
Hang on, Keegan. What's terpology?
Terpology is the study of terp.
Cool. I think I just learned something.
Did you have fun doing it?
I'll say. What are we talking about today, Keegan?
Today we're talking about Bermuda grass.
Bermuda grass? What's that?
Bermuda grass, also known as couch grass, wire grass, double grass, or dogtooth grass, and if you want to be scientific about it, Cynodon dactylum is the most popular worm-seizing grass.
Where in the world did this grass come from?
Bermuda grass was introduced from the tropical and subtropical regions of Africa. Bermuda grass is grown in the southern half of the United States and in the transition zone. Purdue University uses this grass on their football field.
Why can't it be grown farther up north?
Well, Matt, it has an extended dormancy of up to 4 to 7 months, and if it gets too cold, it can die of winter kill. Bermuda grass is a very aggressive grower, growing by rhizomes and stolons, which can result in thatch problems.
What is this hairy thing?
Well, Matt, that would be the ligule. Most worm-seasoned grass have hairs on them.
Cool. Oh, no. The lights went out.
Oh, man, that's not good for Bermuda grass, because it has a poor shade tolerance.
With the lights back on, we won't have to worry about that.
As far as fertilizing goes, it needs at least 3 pounds of nitrogen a year, if not more.
Where should Bermuda be used?
Anywhere that a dense grass is desired. This could be a lawn, sports field, roadside, or even pastures.
This has been so much fun, Keegan.
Well, that's why it's called Fun with Turf, Matt. Thank you, viewers. Tune in next week for our discussion on St. Augustine grass.
So that's, again, just a simple assignment that I put together. I'm sure that you have the same types of creative students at your institutions. Appreciate Chair Karcher for allowing us to have this teaching symposium. There are a few of the speakers that are still in the room. I know we have about 5 minutes left before this session concludes. Are there any questions for any of the speakers? I know John Gerville's here for the, he spoke on learning communities this morning, and if there's any questions for him, he'd be happy to address those.